Hello and welcome to Coffee Science Guru. It's been a very, very long time. Today we introduce a new Josh. The old Josh has left us. It's partly the reason why it's taken so long to get back into Coffee Science Guru. But we got a new, wonderful, highly knowledgeable, competitive barista championship type, Josh Robertson.
Sounds terrifying.
It does.
That sounds terrifying, but I'm a marshmallow.
You're marshmallow. You're nothing like a marshmallow. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. It's Hello. It's good to be here. Just to keep things all nice and comfortable for everyone else. My name is Josh. So no new names there. Just a different personality type.
Yeah. So Josh. Josh is going to take on Josh's role. So we think it's a straight substitution. One for one makes sense. So Josh will be hosting Coffee Science Guru in the future. But I guess before we get into the topic of today, I mean, tell us a bit about yourself. What's your background? Why?
Into coffee.
Why have you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, got in coffee about 9 years ago and started off in franchise. Went up into different cafes and sort of broadened my horizon and my perspective on coffee there. Came across the 7 Miles about, coming up on 3 years, 2.5 years, about 3 years.
That's right, mate.
And now I'm down with the excellent team here in Sydney and trying to wrap my head around all things coffee from a coffee science and education perspective.
That's right. Josh is my education center manager and researcher as well, part time. So yeah, we try and learn as much as we can about coffee. That's for sure.
Definitely.
Awesome. So take us away, I guess.
Right. Okay. Well. So to kick things off, we're looking at coffee trends around the Cafe 2025 report that yourself, Dr. Adam Carr, along with Ben Irvine and Karina, had released, and that is to look at. What does the cafe in 2025 look at? Where does this play? How does this work out for cafe owners, manufacturers? What might the landscape look in 2025 for cafes? Mm. At the moment, cafes pretty much are straddling a very new environment. We're looking at the differences between, obviously we've had a great sweeping pandemic that's happened. But now we're looking at how the new landscape may take place. We're looking at hygiene. We're looking at all these new cash payment systems come through. What's with this new technology and the way that the cafe environment is moving?
I think one of the things to point out, I think, with Cafe 2025, I think is over the last 5 years, we've seen a lot of trends taking place. And I think, there are a few predictions that we had. So maybe worthwhile talking a bit about the background probably of the report actually first, like why we did it. So we started actually the report about, I'd say bordering on a year and a half ago now, I guess. If I think about it, this year's gone really quickly.
Yeah.
We started the report a little while ago. We've been to a lot of trade shows and we saw there were a lot of new technologies coming out, but it seemed like manufacturers were struggling to either go back to the more traditional way of making espresso or putting automation or increasing the level of automation in their machines. And it doesn't seem like there's any one particular trend that people were following. And so we thought, well, let's just do a bit more in-depth analysis of the market and see what it is that we think people will start adopting in the next 5 years.
Yeah.
And then the pandemic came through just before we were about to release the report. But the interesting thing about it was that we found that all the trends that we'd identified through automation, through alternative drinks coming through, through black coffee sales, all those other kinds of things, what are the sort of hot things in the next 5 years? All those things seem to have been accelerated rather than necessarily stopped. Hygiene, as you mentioned, hygiene obviously plays a factor in the way people collect cash. We talked about cashless payment systems, as you identified. Yeah. Touchless payment systems now, which is the same, effectively the same thing. You just focus on which one you want to market. Yeah. But at the moment, it's hygiene. But it's still the same kind of thing. People using their phones to pay. No one really holds cash anymore.
Hmm. Except me, of course.
Except you, Julian. Oh, dear. Poor guys in the street as well. Someone asked me for money the other day, and I was like, do you have Apple Pay?
No, thank heavens.
Tell you what, that would be interesting, actually, if the government did decide to go down that route.
Yeah,
have you been homeless? Here's Apple Pay.
I can't imagine how that would even play
out. I'm sure that's been thought of.
Yeah.
And implemented some.
Well, probably. Goodness me. Definitely. There's a non-profit out there.
Definitely. So with everything that we saw in when we went to these expos and we saw all the new technology coming in, how prevalent are we starting or do we expect automation to take over in a cafe? It's we saw a lot of different stuff, and that's why you looked forward into the future. How prevalent is automation in the market at the moment?
It's more prevalent than you'd think. Yeah. I mean, it's not like, you know, the fact that we've had for the last 10 years espresso machines where you push a button and it automatically cuts out the extraction over time, that's automation.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's not like you're starting and stopping, push button, or you've got a lever down and up. Like, really, the traditional espresso machine was, I mean, Julian, you're well across this kind of stuff, the lever machine.
I've tried to forget it, but...
yeah. I mean...
You gave your powerful, right or left arm muscles and so on as a result of you know the constant lever action.
Yes,
I think that's possibly the only benefit that I can.
Yeah, but even then, right before those, I mean, you've shown us beautiful examples of some espresso machines back in the day. They're really just like steam boilers valves.
Yeah, yes,
gorgeous machines. Yeah.
Yeah, the danger was part of the excitement, I think.
yeah.
Machinery in that time.
Yeah. Yeah, OHS was like kind of like it's a reverse. You got to be half in love with death.
Well, we were using gas, we were using high pressure steam, as electricity and so on, and put those combinations together, and you've got a disaster waiting to happen.
Oh yeah, don't know. Goodness me.
So for sure.
Yeah. So that's the thing. I mean, you started off with basically just big fat steam boilers with valves on it. Now moving towards a lever machine, which is not really automation, but then you move towards electronic control systems, solenoids, and what have you. You've got a modernization where you're just increasing the level of automation. So the fact you have to push button, hey, look, you've got a pump there that delivers 10 bar of pressure rather than having to manually generate it. That's a level of automation.
Yeah.
So that's not to say that that's the most automated we've become. Like now, as prevalent in the most popular of cafes, we've got puck presses, which is basically a way of automatically tamping a coffee so you don't have an RSI generation and you get consistency within the... That's one play of automation. So
yeah, I mean, what we now think of as archaic was at one time cutting edge.
I agree.
For sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I mean, all these things, automatic milk generation, you put all of these things together, you've actually got a super automatic machine just in parts. And actually most of the top-end cafes are using them. You know, automatically dosing grinders, mass dosing machines. I mean, really, the only thing you need, significant skill for is to be able to dial in the recipe, which, by the way, is quite important, right?
Oh, really? You were surprised with me.
But I think we've done some studies recently. Sure. You see the variation in espresso quality across the course of the day. It's huge.
Yeah,
you get a 15-20% variation in recipe just because it gets hotter.
Yeah.
Having someone who can dial it into taste and can notice those things and can adjust accordingly.
Yeah.
Not many machines. There is a couple, by the way. But there aren't many machines that can do that.
Yeah. It's definitely been a benefit to cafe owners and baristas to discover how their coffee can change once you put numbers to paper and you actually see what's happening. I mean, automation is definitely helping in that direction.
Yeah, it comes down to the fourth wave of coffee, that one.
Yeah.
Because we have the fourth wave of coffee was kind of the scientification of coffee, if one might want to say that, where people cared about accurate dosing, precise ways of grinding, getting particle size. The talk of particle size distribution and its impact on extraction really came into the fore in fourth wave coffee, if you hold to the waves.
Mm.
We're now currently, I suppose, moving to the fifth wave, which we believe is a customer experience focus, but... I think automation certainly is going to be one of the top three key trends that we identified in Cafe 2025, and there are a number of reasons for that, not in the least for consistency of generation of coffee.
For sure. It's looking back a bit, I mean, the Australian landscape in coffee has definitely changed. I mean, we've been known as a high-performing coffee-centric country.
Mm-hmm.
That was really built around communities and all that sort of stuff. Julian, how did you find the cafe culture going back, say, 15 years or 20 years ago?
Well, I think it was, even in those days, a very personal thing. I mean, cafe customers wanted to see somebody who knew what they were doing in terms of making coffee.
Yeah.
May or may not have actually translated into anything better to drink, but at least they had that sort of feeling that... because there was somebody apparently knowledgeable behind the machine, and the machine was in evidence in front of them, was part of the mix of both, introducing new customers and indeed keeping them in terms of them coming back. So I think the personality of the barista, even then, was an important factor.
Yes.
Yeah.
Overriding in many ways the technology or indeed the quality of the end product.
Yeah, I think I absolutely agree with that. It's funny, the cafe that I frequent is the one where the person remembers my name and they know precisely what I like to drink.
Sure.
I think their coffee is okay. I shouldn't say this. Probably he's probably going to hear me. I mean, it's okay to really good. I mean, it is probably one of the better cafes around where I live. But really, most of it's in the customer service.
Yes, I mean, certainly the last 15 or 20 years, that has been the case. Go back even further than that. We don't have to, but in the 40 years nearly that I've been working for this company, the first 20 years was really all about the personality of the owner of the business, and really very little to do with the person who was actually making the coffee.
Interesting.
Which could be anybody or nobody.
That implied that the owner of the business was actually present as well, which I'm not sure how prevalent
that is. Yes, because it came out of the Greek and Italian diaspora, both in Melbourne and in Sydney.
Of course.
And progressed from there. So, you know, there has been a huge translation of that kind of personality-driven performance to what we have today.
Yeah, that's a really interesting. I've never really thought about it from that angle as well. Like, you know, having that. So I think that's one of the things that we believe automation brings to the table, right? So I think one of the machines we've reviewed in the past has been the Eversys Cameo.
Yeah.
Right, and that thing basically dials in coffee itself. It generates great milk. It can actually make the whole coffee itself. Doesn't do latte art. Mm. Can't taste it yet. But it's it actually enables people to be freed up to actually show their personality. It actually enables people to interact with people. I mean, part of the reason you go to a cafe is because you observe by someone.
Yeah, well, I think if we lose that, then that's a great danger.
I agree.
And the technology has definitely allowed the... there was a whole period there where basically baristas are focusing more on coffee quality. And I guess customer service, it was never forgotten, but it sort of did... The focus seemed to turn towards automation, and it's very interesting now to see automation as we get further along into it, that the focus is turning back to hospitality, customer service.
Yes.
And that automation is allowing us to do that better.
Yeah, well, it's our cafelier model that we propose here at 7 Miles. Like the idea of your like a sommelier, the person who knows a lot about the coffee, can talk about the coffee, talk to the people, and often again most of it's about relationship rather than necessarily.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, certainly these days, product. You know, you go into a cafe, and the first thing you see is the coffee machine, and it's probably on the front counter.
Yeah.
In the old days, it was on the back counter because they didn't want to see what you were doing.
Yeah. Well, interesting, isn't it? Well, it's kind of ironic though, isn't it? Because you're more likely
I'm not
to see.
Ask about that one.
But you're more likely to see what they're doing this year, right? But like they're more likely to see what they're doing now, right?
Because the back of the machine is facing the customer.
Well, correct, exactly. So they can't see what they're doing. Yeah, it's all right. Yeah. So actually, it's more hidden than it used to be. It's interesting. I always find it ironic, you know, when you see those machines, they say, oh, we've lowered the height of the machine, these big, like, you know, half-meter-high things that are put on a 1.5-meter bench. You know, they say, oh, now the barista can see the customer. It's going, yeah, well, you can see down to their mouth now rather than up to their nose.
Mm.
you want to get rid of it entirely.
It's
think.
A paradox, isn't it?
No, that's right, it is. I mean, like the mod bar and technologies like that place the machines under the bench, which, I mean, honestly, I believe they've got some issues there with heat buildup and dissipation and a few other things like that. But
yeah, cockroaches as well, Roland.
Oh, goodness me, yeah. Yeah. But like it's, I mean, it does look lovely. But I mean, we're not here to talk about the underbench systems. But you know, thinking about I think the nature of automation freeing people up to more hospitable. Look, I honestly think that's what cafes all about. Coffee is a relationship drink.
Absolutely.
I think you lose that relationship part. Actually, I even think about now. Think about Cafe 2025 and where we're at now at the end of 2020. You know, we've clearly seen people moving away from central business districts and now actually having coffee at their local cafe. It's almost like a pub, but for coffee.
Yeah.
Now you're seeing that relationship, I think, build over time. And it probably never been more important. It's not so much to support your local, as Australians would say. Mm. I think it's just become a hub. People go out for their coffee to interact and to mingle and to
absolutely.
It's essential to their quality of life.
And that it's interesting.
And it's growing actually.
Especially we've seen an uptick of how many cafes or suburban cafes have actually sort of exploded once the initial lockdown.
I tell you what, I'd be very interested to do, and I know this is coming. The extension of Cafe 2025. One of the things we first talk about is the fact that we've hit peak coffee, like the per capita consumption of coffee in Australia. Has hit its peak. I mean, yes, our population is growing, and therefore kilos of coffee will still grow with it.
Yeah.
But it's not the rate of it is not increased. In other words, we're not going from 4 kilos per year per person to 5 kilos per year. That's flattened out.
Yeah,
absolutely. We're saturated with cafes. Absolutely, we're saturated with people being able to go out. But I actually wonder. I do wonder now that this suburban thing has happened, and this has happened since Cafe 2025. Mm. I wonder if actually that trend may go back to a growth trend, like per capita consumption may not be. Limited now.
Because it's a new landscape.
Because it's now one of those things people go out to get coffee. People may be drinking more coffee per head.
Hmm.
Simply as their way of getting out and getting out into the world. I mean, I'm not sure that will be the case, but I actually wonder if that... it's worth going back to the drawing board. Maybe Cafe 2030 might.
At this moment, we don't know.
We don't know. No, there's no data at the moment that I have, at least.
Definitely, there's a lot of attention turned towards cafe quality and the craft of special coffees and all that sort of deal, and attention to detail. I mean, I don't think that has ever changed. But we're starting to see a new upswing of the new emerging market where people are really looking at craft beer, craft drinks, craft coffees, and they're also seeming to be paying a little bit more for these particular items that they're consuming. What's your thoughts around coffee that is now becoming specialty coffee becoming slightly more expensive, consumers being more prepared to pay for coffees?
That's an interesting question. I actually think it's not entirely that way. I think, you know, one of the things we looked at in 2025 was that generation, Gen Z coming through, Gen Z, I don't know where you're from, how you want to say that letter, but they are seemingly more willing to pay for specialty coffee than any generation previously. So 18 to 25 year olds are willing to pay, I can't tell you what percentage more, but they are willing to pay for specifically specialty coffee. Now, keep in mind, we define specialty coffee as anything that is effectively what we would call craft coffee, basically a latte.
Yeah.
That's how it's defined, and it's very hard to define in any other measurable way. We have another thing I think we talk about specialty in another podcast, or at least we certainly have an article online as to what specialty coffee even means. It's very nebulous.
Yeah.
And we do address it in the report, by the way, which, by the way, you can actually download online. We actually have a direct link to it. Yeah, I actually think what we're seeing here, I guess to go back to the original sort of question, is are people willing to pay more for it? Well, some demographics are, and certain portions of other demographics aren't. Like, you look at the success of the $7-11 coffee model. They're fully automated systems. People go in there and get their coffee. Before, I went out to visit a customer with Scott, and he, you know, we went to visit him. Good account, lots of people there getting their coffee, but there was a bigger line outside of the 7-Eleven going around the corner for their $1 coffee. The convenience of a fast coffee early in the morning trumped a good coffee early in the morning.
Yeah.
For some, not for all. Obviously, there are quite a few people still there getting their coffee at a cafe. But generally, it's grab and go. They're trying to get to work with their drug. I would say.
Yeah, straight up to a machine, get the coffee, pay for it, walk straight out the door, you know, 30-second transaction.
I would
so
say
that is a percentage of the coffee-drinking public.
Yeah.
I don't know how big that percentage is, but...
Well, I dare say it's interesting. In one of the parts of that report, we looked at the split of demographic as to why certain people drank certain coffee. So the male portion of the population drank coffee for two main reasons. The first one was that it was a good drug. You got them in the morning, and literally
before
the
they were possibly not even aware of.
Yeah. Well, maybe not, but I mean, that's the thing. So they get it because it wakes me up, like that kind of thing. I think that was the category that they answered. And the second thing is they like the flavour.
Yeah.
Whereas women, on the other hand, which, by the way, is a proportion of the population drink less coffee, as in fewer people like coffee in that demographic, which is a big demographic, probably the biggest demographic, let's be honest. Only 35% of women apparently drink coffee. And of those, the reason they drink it is nothing to do with the flavour. In fact, flavour is one of the lower scores. Most women tend to not like the taste of coffee.
Yeah.
Now, mind you, that was a Japanese and American study, but the numbers both aligned pretty consistently between the two of them. So, I mean, does that hold for Australia? We talk about this. Maybe not. Because most of our coffees are, well, they're milk. They're hot milk with a bit of coffee.
So what are we talking about here? Social interaction?
Well, no, it's more, well, yes, actually, that's probably the reason that women actually go to cafes. Most of it's to do with the social aspect.
That's
and
my
the fact
that
it's a exactly right.
Sure.
Bang on.
Build the right
and that's
environment.
What,
yeah,
correct. It's a place away, and it's a building community. Exactly what we're talking about cafes of the future are effectively going to look like.
Yeah.
And that actually appeals more to women, and more than the drink itself, it's the
community aspect.
It's the vibe, I guess, if that's what you say, which is a great reason to go out for a cup of coffee. I mean, let's be honest, we go out for a coffee.
With the whole suburban cafe culture taking off, there's a lot of competition out there for cafes and all that sort of stuff. You're talking stiff competition, I do believe, reading something about 12 kilos on average. Is that
the average cafe is about 12 kilos a week.
12 kilos, yeah, right. What might the cafe look like in the future when we're talking, small-time operators? How is automation going to have a play there?
I think you'll find different models come through. I think one of the things we found in the model is that coffee itself isn't so much of a profitable enterprise by itself anymore. Really, the profitability is, and perhaps always has been, in food. And so I think one of the trends we saw is those places that serve coffee to become more profitable in the future, because profitability is the number one concern of every single cafe out there that we've interviewed, and it should be, particularly in Australia. you know, the price of coffee has not increased significantly across the last 10 years, and yet the rent, think about what the rent price is in the last 10 years. Yeah. Look at the Big Mac Index. Compare the price of coffee. I challenge you. Look at the Big Mac Index and compare that to coffee. Yeah. See how the Big Mac price has increased relative to the price of coffee. There's a significant eye-opener. Coffee hasn't increased much in price. The Big Mac, I think, has doubled.
Has coffee price, as far as a consumer drink, Julian, have you seen coffee prices, you know, trend upwards considerably? Has it been steady?
I think it was pretty static for a very long time.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I have difficulty, you know, working my way or my head around the fact that coffee is now, to me, comparatively expensive. In that you're paying, you know, $4, $4.50, $5 a cup, or whatever it may be, whereas until quite recently it was somewhere close to half of that.
Really?
Yeah, right.
Well, I'm talking within the last 10 years or so. Yeah.
So it went from $1.50 to $3 in the last 10 years.
Well, you know, from $3 to $4 plus. Yeah. Has happened really quite quickly in my perception.
I guess it does depend where you're drinking your coffee as well, though, right? So my local guy does his coffee for about $4. For reference, by the way, to get a latte in the United States will cost you about $5.50 US dollars. So they're paying about three quarters more for their coffee than we are for ours. In fact, Australia's got one of the cheapest coffee pricing, I believe, in the world. I mean, I know €1 for an espresso in Italy is probably the bar, I guess, the basement, but the basement level, like the.
Well, that's pretty much a government controlled
yes.
Price. But once you go beyond the espresso or the short black, then you're into a different territory.
No, exactly, using milk.
And if you're sitting down, watch out.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Indeed, all right.
So we've seen coffee price rise. We've seen.
Somewhat, but I think it's been outweighed by the cost of labour and the rent.
So then where else do cafe operators make their margin?
It's really only food.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that, you know, one of the biggest issues also with coffee is actually quite a skill to make a good coffee. Mm. And most people that are making coffees in most cafes around, not all of them are specialty level baristas. Yeah. They've been trained up somewhere else and gone to a specialty cafe. Those other ones that don't have that are left with a skill shortage. And actually staff turnaround is the second biggest worry of cafe owners that we interviewed.
Well, yes, because of course it's making good coffee consistently, which is the crux of it, isn't
it? Exactly. Exactly.
Automation is leading us. It's making more consistent.
Yeah, and it needs to be. I mean, when automation comes down to a good price, that most people, like for example, in a bakery or in, I dare say, a restaurant, whose staff aren't focused primarily on making coffee. I mean, most restaurants don't make good coffee. I went to one the other day. It made an okay coffee, but they're certainly one of those businesses that could do with a high level of automation.
Yeah.
I mean, most people get around it by just using an espresso pot. and that's normally acceptable enough at the end of a good meal.
Yeah.
But I don't think that that's on. I don't think that's generally in line with the quality of the meal. I mean, I've been to. I think I was in the States and I went to a two or three Michelin star restaurant just because I could. Never really been to one before. I ordered a coffee at the end of it and it was abysmal. It's horrible. Great meal. But the best meals I've had in my life. But
is a traditional view on restaurant coffee, they rarely employ anybody who has any idea how to make a decent cup of coffee.
Yeah, and maybe by the end of a meal, maybe you're too comatose to don't worry about it. But I don't think so. I think that there's certain technologies there, especially in restaurants like that, who I would assume are making decent money, to afford the level of automation that's required to make a really good coffee at the end of a meal. But again, I mean, I'm not in the restaurant game, so I couldn't say that.
I mean, the report definitely led towards the idea that you could sort of target two different markets. You referred to earlier that
fast
coffee, and that people come in, grab their coffee, and then leave straight away.
Yeah.
And then what can you define for us what slow coffee is?
So slow coffee is that kind of. So this is kind of when we talked a little earlier about sort of women being that key demographic that like to sit down and enjoy their coffee and have relationships. Slow coffee is precisely that. Having an environment that allows people to stay for a fairly long time. It's a relaxing environment. Basically, it's people just sitting down to enjoy their coffee and the people that are across from them.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of slow coffee. The traditional coffee making, effectively, in Australia, which is sit down, cafe, have your drink.
So with that second fear being retention of staff, I mean, you train up fantastic baristas to do the job, dial in coffee, taste coffee, and they get to a good level of skill, and then they move on.
Mm.
Where can automation fill that gap? Where can they?
Directly.
Yeah.
Directly. I mean, if you have a machine, for example, you put in an Eversys Cameo or you put in a Scanamat Topper, but particularly the Cameo because it dials itself in. You put that machine in, really, you push a button and it delivers perfect espresso to recipe. Yeah. You push another button, it delivers perfect milk to recipe. And then you can craft a beautiful coffee with minimum, with just the push of two buttons. And then, you know, a flourish of the wrist, which, by the way, the latte art's not an easy thing to master. I know. I should make an Instagram of my latte art. you know, strange caricatures of a tulip. But, like, it's a... I think it helps it directly. I mean, you don't need to have as high a trained staff to deliver a very good coffee experience. Mm. It's a very expensive way of doing it, but it certainly eliminates that training aspect. And you can have a new person every day. And in fact, you could arguably focus on hiring people that are more hospitality focused, which I dare say would drive more sales. Like, if a person's focusing more on remembering someone's name and the kind of coffee that they want rather than actually the making of the coffee.
So we've now come full circle.
Exactly. Yeah. Victory. I call that a victory.
Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, the other thing is also, I mean, it also, you know, there are other trends we saw in there, like, you know, the collaborations.
Yes, we can go back into history. Yeah. It was mine host, the landlord or the owner of the business, who was the point of contact for everybody who came into the establishment.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah. I mean, you can actually use that model as an extrapolation to almost any business, too. So, for example, if I were to, I don't know, say we were to do a collaboration with, I don't know, let's pull the name out of the bag, like Uniqlo, clothes shop.
Yeah.
Have a little automated coffee kiosk at the front, someone welcoming someone with a coffee, welcome to blah, 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 here we go. Maybe it's a loss leader, but gets people into the shop, gives people a nice time while they're shopping, maybe keeps them shopping longer.
Yeah.
Good collaboration.
Yeah, I mean, I've recently moved down from Gold Coast to join the team down here in Sydney, and you certainly see those collaborations start to appear in some of those major shopping centres. I saw a...
it's like Donut Time, Donut Time and someone or other. What's Top Shop, I think it was? They were donuts, not coffee, but that's that's an example of a collaboration that I've seen.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
and you know, I think that could do well.
Yeah, fantastic.
There are plenty of other ideas we've got. We shouldn't share them publicly because maybe we can make some money from it. But it's not just about making money. It's just about, you know, being able to get good quality coffee and good service.
Pretty much anywhere
you go. Australian, you know, these trends.
So let's turn our focus on to the idea of technology. Julian, what was the focus when it came to coffee? Let's say 15, 20 years ago. What was the focus of coffee production then? Was it on speed? Was it on quality?
Well, it was certainly veering towards quality because that was the point, I think, at which Australia discovered that there was a difference between bad coffee and good coffee.
Yeah, sure.
Speed is a function, but I don't think it was as great then. I think there was, in a sense, in people's minds, more time to wait for coffee and so on than there is today.
Mm. Yeah.
So that's probably where the greatest change has taken place. In that we believe ourselves to be in a faster-paced society and therefore everything must happen more quickly. I personally have the exact opposite view.
right.
I come from a very different sort of tradition.
Sure.
So that, I think, is possibly my answer there.
Fair enough. And then with machines, what are the direction that manufacturers are starting to look at for machines? What are the things that they are focusing on the most? I mean...
Well, they're not focusing on anything particularly. Every manufacturer,
they're looking for more and more beautiful machines, aren't they?
Honestly, well, no, not all of them. Some of the machines I saw, ghastly, absolutely horrible-looking machines. Yes, some of them. Some have sleeker-looking chassis. Honestly, I think the industry. I mean, I'm not going to apologise for this because that's what I saw, guys. I think it's an industry dancing on a pinhead. I think a lot of machine manufacturers are trying to find point of distinction.
Yeah.
And they're adding useless pieces of technology to their machines.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, arguably very complex and interesting pieces of technology, but at its core, all you really need is enough pressure to drive hot water through a bed of coffee particles to extract coffee. Mm. You don't, you know, I'm going to might get slayed for this, but, you know, pressure profiling... You know, temperature control, variation, temperature control, it's all interesting. And yes, they all can affect flavor, but it's overcomplicating the business of making coffee. Yeah. I mean, if you can find something that gives you a point of distinction, again, as long as you can communicate that to your customers, we found the optimum temperature extraction, we can get more this and more that. But most people using those machines, I don't think they know. And in the real world, in the real world operation, you want consistency. People are coming back for Ben's coffee or they're coming back for Josh's coffee.
Yeah.
It's not because they're coming back because they know there's a temperature profile swinging from 85 to 95 Celsius and back again.
Yeah.
They don't know that.
No.
They don't care, I don't think.
They're there just for the flavour.
That's right. I mean, if that's what's happening, that's what he does time in, time out, fine.
I would say give me a spotless espresso machine and a good grinder. that's pretty much all I require.
Oh, well, basically, I mean, I spend some more money on a good, consistent grinder. I mean, but, you know... And that's technology worthwhile. Yeah. You know, I see grinders, they're doing dosing by weight, which can be more accurate, which is fine. It is expensive to do that. The thrust behind it's good, I think.
Yeah.
Although it's interesting, you have to, it's not that, what's the word? With any of those kind of technologies, you need to have some degree of prediction, like drip prediction in a Lamazoco machine. We need to know that once I turn off the pump, we know a few drips happen. You do 1,000, in Lamazoco themselves, for example, they do 10,000, I think, extractions, and then make a model of that. So they have to predict. And so they're using some of a correlation to predict it when it should stop. And that, in some ways, I maybe that's overkill, but you know, it's the same with grinders, right? Yeah. You've got a distance in the distance of the funnel, and maybe you know, maybe we shouldn't talk about this. This could be a focus of another very long. How far are we going? We're nearly done now in terms of time. Look, I think machine manufacturers have overcomplicated the business.
Yeah,
I think a good quality, stable machine that can deliver consistent quality time and time and again. If they've got some interesting technology that keeps it to that spec, fantastic. Mm. But I do think consistency and automation where the industry is going. They don't like to say the word automation because it means lost jobs. It can be translated as such, but that is where many manufacturers are going. Some have gone the other way, but I think that's probably a mistake.
Yeah, it's very interesting to see what the next 5 years for cafe culture are going to hold with the way automation comes into the marketplace and changes or affects people's perceptions.
It's always been my opinion that as soon as they can put an Eversys Cameo into Lamazoco Linear, or a San Remo, you know, something that looks amazing, you're gonna knock out machine there.
Yeah.
Of course, keeping the price under $20,000 would also be good. Machine manufacturers, if you're listening, that's your target.
Keep the price low, and then cafe operators can get in there.
When you think of the number of outlets these days which are not cafes, which are actually serving coffee and charging money for it, there is the future for introduction of automation to a greater extent, in my view, than in standalone, properly run cafes. There's a distinct difference between the two, and yet if you look around the marketplace, there are probably more machines in places which are not cafes today than ever there were before.
Yeah, that's a good point. And the people who would stand to get benefit most from automation would actually be cafes that aren't of the highest caliber.
Yes.
It's just ironic that the cost point is inverted that way. The people that are like that generally can't afford that level of espresso machine.
Yeah.
So either they need to become more affordable, or which is kind of going to be hard based on the level of controls that you need, or the other way. Look, I honestly... Yeah. No, I see automation playing in every aspect of the market, although we can definitely differ there. Plenty of people would argue with me on that one. But I think it's already there, to be honest.
Yeah.
Well,
that's. I think we'll wrap it up there.
Lovely.
It's been a fantastic first podcast back. First podcast for me.
Yep.
Still learn the lay of the
land. Yes, welcome,
here,
Josh.
But it's, thank you.
Good
thank
job.
You very much.
Yes, why not?
Why not? We'll see everyone back next time. Just a reminder that if you want to read the Cafe 2025 report, you can access on our website. We've also done a webinar around that as well. So if you want to get a few more detailed information about what the Cafe 2025 might look like, definitely recommend reading that one. Anyway, we'll catch you guys next. Signing off, Josh.
And Adam.
Julian here. A pleasure to be back.
Yeah, absolutely. Fantastic. It's been fantastic. Thank you, Josh.
And we'll see you guys next time.
See you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.